And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL Holly Eva. This is Felicia sitting in for Jimmy for Out of the Box, and he is likely to waltz in here at some point in the show. This is KKCR, the station that loves you, and just throwing out some love to one of our listeners, Victoria. Her car just broke down on her right at Anini Vista, just off the highway, very close to the Princeville Airport. So if somebody's there and knows how to help her, there's a damsel in distress on the side of the road. And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And this is Out of the Box. In the studio with me right now is another Akamai listener, Bonnie. Say hello.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Okay, so she is mic'd up and very often is a caller in, so I like it when I can bring in different callers that have a lot to share. Today's show is going to be rather eclectic. There are many issues. This is the first show of our new year, 2014, and so there's so many things that are working well for everybody. We'll be reviewing both a blend of positive things that are coming around the pike that are great opportunities, and then other things that are challenges where we need to be working together well to be figuring things out. I have invited a handful of primary source callers today. So as we go over a number of issues, some people might have a difference of opinion, and so we're looking forward to hearing both sides of the issues. So we will be talking about a number of things, everywhere from water, power, I want to say celebrations of, you know, plantings, opportunities. There's many, many different pieces today that we can cover. And Bonnie, I see you brought in a list. So, and we're going to be zooming the camera lens in and out from whether we're talking about what's going on right here on this island to what's going on at the global level, like the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the beginning of the state legislature, many, many things. So whether we're looking close, like right here in our island itself, right around the corner for developments, or all the way up beyond what's going on in the United States, really all around the world. So we're going to be hearing a lot of those different elements. And Bonnie had suggested a song. And so I'm going to start off with this song with our hometown boy, Graham Nash. And so it tells us really how things don't really change that much over time, but we're always working together. We're always making things happen different. I think I was actually living in Chicago at this time. I was a little girl in, I was at 1969, 68, something like that. It was, this came after, I believe it was a political,
Chicago 7?
It was the Democrat convention.
With Abby Hoffman? The Chicago 7, I think, maybe.
I don't know. Too little to remember, but great song.
Sit yourselves down, there's nothing for you here. Won't you please come?
Right on. Should we play the rest of that little piece? We can change the world, you know, and it's a difficult process, but a lot of us working on that together. So, Bonnie, there are a number of really positive things going on, and I want to mention a few of them in case people are wanting to get involved with this. One of them is the breadfruit workshop, the Ulu workshop. Did you hear about that? Are you going?
It costs, what?
Like $10 or something. I actually, I'm not supposed to say costs on anything on here, but it is, it's going to be on Saturday at the West Side in Kalaheo, and right down there at National Tropical Botanical Gardens, and I'm pulling up what time it's at. You'd think I'd already have that right in front of me, but it should be a great thing, and it's basically from tree to table, and it is January 9th, 8:30 a.m. to actually that's I got the wrong day, huh? It's January 9th, 8:30 a.m. until January 11th at 12 p.m. So. People could look that up on Breadfruit from Tree to Table, Maui, Oahu, and Kauai on the internet. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for playing Graham Nash. What song was that?
That was Chicago, and I...
Oh, Chicago, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, would you mind playing Military Madness?
I could look that up, and I'll do that in a little bit. Yeah, because this is a talk show more than a music show. But it's a good song though, and I will bring that one up,
especially when we're talking about PMRF.
Okay.
No kidding. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye. Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So yeah, you just showed me a little card about something to do with the Pacific Missile Range facility. So it is the impact statement, right, and the proposed action. Do you want to tell the listener a little bit about this?
Well, the final environmental impact statement / ocean EIS has been completed, and this action is to conduct training and testing activities between Kauai PMRF to Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. The in-waters around the Hawaiian Islands off the coast of Southern California, the transit corridor between Hawaii and Southern California. The purpose of this proposed action is to conduct training and testing activities to ensure the Navy accomplishes its mission to maintain, train, and equip combat-ready. And it's going to be underwater explosives and sonar. And if you need more information, you can go online to www.htteis.com. And there are hard copies available at the following public libraries. Kapa'a. That's about it. And in California, at Long Beach, Maine.
All right, so that was the first I really saw this. So it looks like the Navy mailed this out. It's going out to all their different people. And so the sonar. So that is...
Sonar and underwater explosives. It's related to their Star Wars.
Okay. All right. Well, that's... I'm glad that you brought this up, and we might have an Akamai listener who might want to call in with some feedback on that. In the meantime, we have just been joined by another person from our community, John Wareheim. Thanks for coming in. Are you mic'd up okay?
Well, let's test it.
Yep.
Sound okay?
It sounds okay. So I'm glad that you came in because... this is another issue is what was called the horizontal well. Now it's called something like Kahili High Level Energy Savings Project, or they changed the name somehow.
Yes, Kahili Horizontal Directional Drilled Well Project.
Okay. So
I have a question, though.
Okay.
When you called me up, you said, oh, John, I think you're close by. Can you come and...
I know, so I'm pulling you
in
cold.
How did you know I was close by?
I asked your wife where you were.
Okay.
So
I thought it was ESP or something.
Yeah. Right, no.
Okay, that clears it up.
Okay,
thank
now
you.
Be right next to the mic so they hear you well.
All right.
Okay, so I'm just going to claim my bias. I'm really nervous about this horizontal well.
Uh-huh.
It scares me because there's part of it that seems like a good idea to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I like is that the pressure of the water coming out of the mountain is better than having to pump it up, right? So.
Well, it saves a lot of money.
Saves a lot of money. Yeah. And then one of the reasons why I called...
Actually makes money. Yeah.
So why I called you in here and trying to have balance on the reporting on this, and you made a really excellent film about Bhutan.
Right.
Called, I loved it, about...
Taking the Middle Path to Happiness.
Taking the Middle Path to Happiness. And you got the experience of going to Bhutan because you did a very big horizontal water... how would we describe that? Like an energy production...
Yeah, my work in Bhutan was primarily hydroelectric development.
Okay.
But... Bhutan does use a lot of tunneling in hydro development. But the scale of tunneling that we're doing in Bhutan is Himalayan scale.
Okay.
It's nothing compared to what what we're doing here is nothing.
What we're doing here is about 2 feet diameter, right? The drill will be about 2 feet diameter.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and in Bhutan, you can run a truck through these. So it's the same principle. It's a drilling machine, but it's huge. And here we're using a very small, it's a pretty good-sized drill for Hawaii. For the Himalayas, it would be considered a tinker toy.
Right. And then, so again, like always liking to claim my bias.
I need to claim my bias, too.
And you're a water guy, right?
I also first conceived of this horizontal directional drill hydro water development project 25 years ago.
Okay. And so that's good. So when I
look at... I'm really biased.
You're really biased.
My
that's
idea.
Great. And Bonnie, you have a bias too, correct?
I love the headwaters of Ale. I think they should remain intact.
Okay. So we have two against one. No, I'm kidding. There's three of us together to sit here and discuss this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I get scared,
yeah.
I'm just going to call it out for what it really is.
I think we all have to, right? Otherwise, we're just playing a game.
We're just playing a game. So when I get scared hearing about a development like this,
mm-hmm.
my fear is, number one, these people, number two, is these people that are drilling it are from somewhere else, and they haven't drilled in our volcanic mountains before.
Mm-hmm.
So I worry that they'll mess up. And
could
then,
I address that?
Yeah, okay.
I'm working on this project, but I'm not the general contractor. I'm just a consultant on it. And the reason why no one in Hawaii, no Hawaii company can do this is just like a lot of projects in Hawaii that are large, we don't have the capacity here. But I have to qualify that. The drillers, the drilling contractor, Mears, International Drilling Company, has an office in Honolulu. And they've got a lot of experience in Hawaii. And in other words, their main office is not in Hawaii, but they have a very active office in Hawaii. They've got some of the most experienced drillers. They have the most experienced drillers in Hawaii working for them. And they've got miles and miles and miles of drilling experience in these conditions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then if I get to my number one fear, number three would go on the spiritual end, you know, respecting the history.
Absolutely.
And I don't put that as my number one because I am an immigrant to the culture. I respect the culture. But so my number one fear is that as this pipe gets drilled in and goes a couple miles into there, that it's going to be pulling water from one ahupua'a to another, and that wet spots would dry up where it's not expected. Somehow all that water is coming from somewhere, so it's not going to go out where it's meant to be.
Yeah, no, that's true. Any time you drill a well and pump it, whether it's or you drill a horizontal well and allow it to flow, water is coming from somewhere where it used to be.
Right.
And it's no longer there. That's obvious, right? A lot of this water runs underground. It's
right.
not on the surface.
Right.
It's difficult to predict just exactly. Well, it's impossible to predict exactly what's going to happen because all wells are experimental. Every well that's ever drilled anywhere is an experiment because nobody can see into the earth. There's there's ground penetrating radar. We've got a lot of really great tools to help us. But I think the most important thing is to put this in perspective. And the USGS water budget for the Lihue, when they say Lihue, it's all of East Kauai.
It would be like the Puna district?
Yes, right, okay.
That whole watershed.
So they study what is sustainable for withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
And that withdrawal can be pumping or horizontal wells. Okay, that is groundwater withdrawal sustainability based on USGS study.
Okay.
Now, some years are wetter, some years are drier.
Right.
This is just average, right?
Nah, it's not average because we get climate change, and USGS was just quoted in a Garden Island this August about the lack of water and that Waialae is not the driest, not the wettest spot on Earth anymore. It's the West Maui Mountains.
Maui is, yeah.
So I think
But they are revising their water budgets based on, and they, you're right. The USGS is quite aware of the drying, and they've got data indicating that in some of the basins that the drying in Kauai is not quite as bad as the rest of the state, but we are drying.
And I do have an Akamai caller holding that I think has knowledge on this.
Let me put out this one number. And this is based on USGS data, the most recent. It's May. They are revising it again. It will be soon to be not the most recent. The sustainable yield for the Lihue area is 183 million gallons a day.
The sustainable yield is 130. Talking to the mic.
Okay, let me.
Is this for the future development that's been rubber stamped? Is this including future development, or is it just primarily what exists now?
No, this has nothing to do with development.
No,
it has water development.
No, I mean these stats that you're going to quote.
Oh, this is USGS. It's not. Doesn't. Are you talking about?
I'm talking about taking into consideration what exists already as far as the population and this and that, or the projected in the future, because there's all this rubber, this development that's coming on down the pike.
What
so
kind
does,
of
is this inclusive?
Well, I think you're meaning when there's wells coming out. Let me grab, I got a caller on
okay.
that I think
let me,
is.
Let
okay.
me get to the number, okay? Okay? So I just looked it up, okay? So sustainable, average sustainable yield, according to the USGS, is 183 million gallons a day.
183 million gallons a day is the sustainable yield of water, according to the USGS.
Yes. Now, the Department of Water's project, I don't know what they're calling it now, but whatever this project that we're talking about, the yield that they are looking for is 4 to 8 million gallons a day, with 6 being really... 6 would be wonderful. You know, if they can get 8, they won't use it. They would just probably, you know, valve it down. But that's 4 to 6, maybe 8 million.
Okay, great.
Let's take that caller.
We'll take the call. And okay. there's time for all of us to be able to share our ideas.
Yeah.
Thank you, caller. You are on the air.
Hey, thanks very much. I just had a question for John regarding technical aspect. I was just curious if this is a 24-inch bore. Is it lined or unlined?
Really hard to say because the location of the bore hasn't been determined yet. And until you start drilling, it's very difficult to decide exactly
the
formation
product.
Will require. I would guess that it will be lined in the beginning.
Yeah, if it wants to cave in on the bore, you're going to have to line it. So anyway,
if it starts caving in, I would suspect that the drillers will start another well.
Well, anyway, if I just wanted to say to your listeners that if anybody would like to read a really good book about Kauai's water development up to this time, Carol Wilcox's book Sugar Water is what you want to read, because it details the entire state's water developments through the plantation era.
Yeah, it's a wonderful
to
book.
A project,
wonderful book.
And it also entails what went on with those crews trying to dig those holes.
Yeah, I have an autographed copy in my library.
Isn't that a wonderful book?
It's a fabulous book.
I'll tell you what, I need a new one now.
And great old photos.
Okay.
Yes, it's just terrific.
All right.
Thanks very
Thank
much
you.
For your time and
Thank
the show.
Happy
Thank
New
you.
Year.
Thank you, John. Hey, Happy New Year to you, too.
Happy
Bye-bye.
New Year.
So I am seeing, and Bonnie, you helped to point this out to me, that the Department of Water announces there's a meeting on the well project. And so this will be happening. It's called the Water Plan 2020 Kahili Horizontal Drill Directional Drill Well Project. The meeting is from 6 to 8 p.m., January 27th in the Kapaa Middle School dining room. And there's a 28-page report released last month prepared by Plash Econ Pacific. Is that how you say that?
Sounds good enough.
Okay, so Bonnie, you have another piece of paper right in front of you. What are you looking at right there?
Well, this article is published in the Garden Island on the 23rd of December, and it basically stated that this report has three alternatives, which are: one, continuing to supply water from the current water supply system, or two, modifying the Vaiahi water treatment plant by adding a solar farm and related improvements to reduce energy costs, and number three, moving forward with the horizontal directional drill well project. So I urge folks to come out. I know it's tough on January 27th at 6 p.m. and tell them which one you want, alternative one, two, or three.
So those are things that are available. We never do a call to action. They don't have to come, but that is something that could be done. And then I would be, I'm certainly going to go because it's very interesting to me. Bonnie, what is your biggest fear? Like, I expressed my two number one fears. I mean, my number one and my number two. What is your biggest concern? I should use the word concern instead of fear.
Well, Well, my concern is, like what John was saying, backed it up about, yeah, your fear, Alicia, about when you take water from one place, then when another ahupua'a may suffer. So it seems like there's plenty of water there, and, you know, the solar thing sounds real good. The article about, you know, the Department of Water stated that it's going to be a little more expensive, but, you know, in the long run, wouldn't it be proactive to think about keeping water available for future generations, you know, using the solar thing without, like, draining the aquifer in one section to give it to Grow Farm for maxing out all their development down there.
Okay, and you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Out of the Box with Felicia. Bonnie, a concerned citizen, is in here, and John Wareheim, a person with decades of experience in hydroelectric power and drilling for water purposes. So, John Wareheim, do you have some responses to Bonnie's suggestion, like to consider some of these other possibilities, and you know, let's look at each of the three.
Well, I think Bonnie described that there's going to be three alternatives.
Yeah, there's.
Okay, and that it's some kind of a cost benefit analysis. I haven't seen the report. I've seen early drafts of it, and I provided some data for some pieces of it, but I haven't seen the whole thing, so I don't know. But what I would like to see is how the numbers run. You know, I think that's basically what this is, right?
The money?
Yeah. What is the most cost effective?
The Department of Water says the most cost effective one is moving forward with the Kahili horizontal directional drilled well mm-hmm. project.
I wasn't aware of that.
And this says, an estimated cost of $60 million, which is a lot. Like, when we're looking at our energy investments, there's a number of things. Like, if you look at all these little projects that we got going on, we're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars, like $200-300 million for just basic infrastructure. So when I do the math on 70,000 people, it's a lot per head, you know. So and I know that this is about an issue much, much bigger than water. I mean, than dollars. So for those listening who are offended by my speaking to the numbers of the money, I apologize. We'll get to these other elements. But so there's the economic piece of it. The part of me that just looks at the simple science of it, this is a question. My instinct would be, if we allowed for more gray water, allowed for more water catchment, that could reduce some of the need. And if, in theory, I kind of like the idea of horizontal versus vertical, partly because the water is cleaner and because there's not the need to pump it up. Like, if we had a hurricane or something like that, it's going to continue to push it. But what about tiny little straws instead of one big giant straw? Like, what goes through my mind, I know that the water system has, I think there's 14 different water districts on Kauai. That's not like one big pipe that runs around the island. So this is a novice question, but it seems to me like where there are water tanks and different ahupua'a, what if there was a short straw that went in horizontally and just brought water out to that one water tower so that we don't wreck another ahupua'a, right? Because that's like the core principle of the land management system on the island is
true. Yes.
Why don't steal from your neighbor, right? Don't
right.
steal from another ahupua'a. So
I don't think this would be transferring water from one ahupua'a to another.
I think it would. Like, 2 miles is pretty deep, right? You know, it really depends upon the direction that it's going. And at least when I've gone to the meetings, they show what's a dike. I consider that mm-hmm. an igneous intrusion. It's these vertical slices that go up. You can see it when you look at the mountainside. You see a big, thin rock, basically, that goes
impervious layer.
Impervious layer, yes. That goes vertical.
Yes.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong, when you pierce those dikes, you bring water from a different little water system, right? You're pulling it from the next one over. Those dikes create the water that goes to different springs.
True.
Okay. Yes. So, I know I'm novice. But so when I look at that, and when their explanation talks about piercing through these layers of dikes, it's going to be draining something else.
Yes.
I don't see
There's no doubt about it. What we don't know is what it may be draining. And I think that one of the requirements will be that all of the streams in the vicinity have gauging stations on them. And that we'll be able to know, and we'll be able to manage it.
But once they put, $60 million into doing something, and what I got from listening to the presentation is if it works perfectly the first time and there's not a problem, it's $30 million. And if they come up dry, no pun intended, it doesn't quite work out the way they want, well, then, you know, they doubled the price. They said this would be a $30 million project. Let's double it just in case. And I appreciate that because that seems to me pretty accurate.
That's true, Felicia. That's the way it is with drilling. And it's not it's not any different with horizontal or vertical wells. You can get dry holes. You can come up dry drilling in any direction.
Now, I welcome and invite an Akamai listener that is more of a cultural practitioner than me. One thing I find that on air, I really don't like to be speaking to the feelings of the cultural practitioners as I sit as a perpetual haumana of that, a student. I am not a kumu, so I do not feel that I can do a teaching to the spiritual perspective, but if there is somebody listening that has those feelings, this is a really great opportunity to be able to discuss them with John. I know that the headwaters of Wai'ale is extremely sacred, and I know that, like in Wailua, we can see where the water gets pretty much 100% diverted from the north side of the Wailua over, I think it goes down to the Kapaya power plant. Would that be correct? And eventually comes out in those.
Well, you have to understand that the option that's being presented here, the one with the solar panels, is water that's being diverted through old plantation ditches. So it's surface water being treated, and that is also being transferred from one watershed to another.
Okay.
So it's really kind of hard to have a potable, a county water system that's not going to, we've got to take it from somewhere. It's got to go from somewhere. So what we need to come to an agreement on is where it's coming from. But basically, it's all coming from Kauai. And it's a matter of if we grow, if Kauai ever, become, say, we look at Honolulu. They have so much more water needs than we do. Right now we're blessed, I think, with a relatively small population, and our problems are kind of small. But still, everybody needs drinking water, and we're going to have to come together as a community and decide what the best way is to provide that.
Well, growing up on the desert, I'm always amazed that we have water issues here where it rains constantly. Bonnie, you had something to say?
Well, I don't think it rains constantly.
Well, a lot more than it does in Arizona. Like, you can go 6-7 months without a drop.
Yeah, well, that's the desert. This is beautiful Kauai. And all I have to interject here is you mentioned something about, okay, the project moves forward, the horizontal drilling, and then we see how the streams are impacted. Well, isn't it like too late then that these streams are depleted because of the way the water flows with the headwaters and all that incredible stuff?
Well, there's going to be a very rigorous permit process.
Yeah, I seen it. I commented when this thing went back to the drawing board, and all I got to say is climate change is barreling down. Look what happened to the Philippines. It was 48 hours, 2 days of 190-mile sustained winds. And we can't deny that climate change is not happening. And as far as we've lost our trade winds really frequently. Hardly we get our trades, which bring the rain. We get all this fog from Tutupele on the Big Island, and it's because we get the southerly wind flow, the corner winds already. Yesterday, you couldn't see the skyline or the horizon, and we get corner winds today. And this happens a lot. I've been here for almost 40 years, and I can see that. And I ain't no layman, and the USGS has also confirmed this climate change. So I'm looking forward to their most recent update about climate change. And I'm sorry if I'm stating my opinion, but I think we should choose number two, modifying the Waiahe water treatment plant by adding a solar farm and related improvements to reduce energy costs, keep the water flowing like it is, and no need drill. But Ikalamai, that's just my opinion. I don't know if I'm supposed to state
no,
it.
No, that's why you're in here. You have concerns, and I mean, my instinct is to feel more comfortable with first working with, can we do water catchment? Can we do gray water reclamation? Yeah. Just like looking at, okay, what can we do? How can we work that one out? I think that, like, if I've been going to the water meetings correctly, like the water contamination meetings, the challenge is the water's contaminated. So, you know, we have to sit there and look at all these different elements. When we have the water that's poisoned from sugar, well, what's going to happen when we get the trickle-down effect from the kind of agriculture that's happening right now, and everybody's screaming about that one, right? So when we have this saturation of pesticides, and we haven't stopped them, we've simply said, tell us what you're spraying us with, but this is 30 years from now, that stuff is really going to be trickling into this aquifer. So the fear when we go, all right, well, we'll go horizontal instead of vertical, is that they'll go, okay, what? We're out of hock. We don't have to worry about what we're contaminating in the aquifer. That becomes a solid concern for me, is it gives somebody an out. But at the same time, do we want to be drinking the atrazine and stuff like that? So and forgive me if I'm speaking as a novice, but one who goes to all these meetings and is listening to a cornucopia of toxic concerns. And so I think step one, utilize our water better. Step two, you know, I don't know if we can just try a little bit. Like, what if we got a little bit of water instead of going quite so penetratingly deep?
Wait, one more thing. Mm-hmm. Step number five is the Department of Water has no conservation plan whatsoever. I think maybe they should go back to the books and develop a water conservation plan. That seems like a very wise thing to do, is to conserve water now, and then we won't have to be here talking story about all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
There's no. I asked the head of the Department of Water, does DOW have a water conservation plan? And he said no.
Right. So there's a lot of really obvious issues here. We have another caller. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. Hello?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, question is, you brought up one major comment, water catchment. Is it legal? Is it not legal here on this island?
It's legal. Right, John?
I don't know. I've never seen anyone do it on Kauai.
Years ago, saying water catchment was illegal in Kauai.
Well, I have about 3,000 gallons on my property. You know, it's not hard to do.
Well,
we've got barrels around our house.
You know, I mean, it's pretty easy to do. I mean, I think that, like, when you're looking at what water catchment is, like, if people are holding a whole lot that's being depleted from what's going downstream, if you're in a flat neighborhood.
That's not my point, Felicia. My point is, from my understanding, on Kauai, they passed an ordinance maybe a year ago, maybe a little bit longer, that flat out and out said it is illegal to catch water on Kauai.
Okay, I will look that up.
I'm curious to find out what the listeners have to say about that.
Okay, and let's both look that up, because when I installed mine 5 years ago, it was not, and I did look at it.
Yeah, this is something relatively recent, and it's not Hawaii. It's only Kauai.
Really? Okay. Well, we will look into that. I can't confirm or deny it, and I hope
it's not... Put it out to the listeners. Maybe somebody will call in.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much.
Keep up the great show.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Hello.
And you are on the air.
Hi. Hey, I'm calling about what you're talking about here. If you go down to the building department now and with the new home design and you say, I want to design in a water catchment and I want to build berms on my property to allow me to catch the water that flows across my property, they won't allow you to do it.
Really?
So, yes, it's against their building code right now to allow you to do that.
Berms down your swale. You can't put...
No. They'll tell you, you don't own that water. That water belongs to the government.
So if you have just swales, which isn't, you know, it doesn't hold it, it just flows it down, you're not allowed to do that?
Well, if you're building a new house and you're creating swales to direct the water, that is illegal. If you have an old house and you're taking what's coming out of your gutters and using that, yeah, I'm not sure the legality of that, but if you go in to build a new home with a design of building a property to utilize the water that falls on it, they won't let you do that because that water doesn't belong to you.
Okay, I got to get somebody from the building department and find
out. Okay, I hope they call in. I'm really interested. It's a great day. Hey, when are they having the meeting anyway?
January?
On the water cost-saving water protection program or whatever they're dressed it up as being this time.
It's January 27th.
Okay.
From 6 to 8 p.m. at the Kapa'a Middle School cafeteria.
Okay, good. I'd like to be there. Thanks
Please.
Very much.
Okay,
mahalo.
Bye.
I want to point out that our fearless out-of-the-box man, Jimmy Trujillo, has surfaced into the room. And, Jimmy, do you have anything you want to say on water?
We need it.
We need it.
Without it.
We can't live without it. That's accurate. So, John, we have a bunch of issues coming up. I welcome you to hang out in here if you have some time. But we're going to start to move a little bit further. We can have a couple last statements on the water, but we have a whole list of issues that are concerning citizens. And, you know, I really appreciate that we have so many engaged people on our island. Any final thoughts on the water, and please feel welcome to chime in on a whole lot of different issues.
Okay, I just want to repeat, just to give this some perspective, that there'll be a very rigorous permit process. There'll be in-stream flow standards that must be maintained. So the Department of Water just can't drill this well and take what they want.
Well,
they have to gauge the streams that may be impacted, and there are going to be permits that require regular monitoring, and that a minimum flow. There are minimum stream flow standards for all water projects.
I guess,
and it's going to have to they're going to have to maintain that. It's and I think it's really also important to put this into a perspective, because when you're looking at a sustainable yield of 183 million gallons a day for the Lihue area, and this project is projecting 4 to possibly 8 million gallons, you're looking at 2 to 4% of the total sustainable yield according to USGS studies. It's not a really big thing.
Well,
but it's really important in terms of how much drinking water we need on the east side. That'll do it.
Six million gallons
a day will do it.
You made
it's
a comment.
Come from somewhere.
You made a comment that basically to me brings to the heart of all these challenges that we're facing, whether it's power or water or land use, and that's that many of us, and I'm starting to put me in that category, have a hard time really trusting the wisdom of the government, and when they say, we have the EPA standard, or we have, you know, the Food and Drug Administration, or whatever standard, the Federal Trade Commission or Communication Commission or anything like that, I think many of us go, well, but they represent the opposite team. I will say with the Department of Water, I think our water people do really care about us, but I do think that they are on the side of the divide that would call the rest of us conspiracy theorists. So that's really the difference between Democrats and Republicans. The Democrats and the Republicans sit on the same side of the ground that believes the broader narrative. They haven't lost confidence in, you know, the official word. And then other people, you know, sometimes there's a lot of collateral damage when we go, well, we don't believe, we don't trust, you know, where's this money coming from? How's the loan collateralized? Where are we borrowing $300 million from? Why is it coming from a European bank? What are the European banks doing?
What is $300 million in Europe? I didn't hear about this.
I'm looking at that as all the different solar installations, the biotech facility.
Other subject.
Yeah,
okay,
other subjects.
Sorry.
Biotech facility. There's also the... Mm-hmm. The very much needed new landfill waste site. So we have all these infrastructures and the roads, all of it's needed. I'm not arguing that it isn't needed. It's very expensive when you put it all together. And so somewhere somebody is paying for it somehow. And if they're not, then we go, well, why are they lending us the money? So that's the distrusting side. I have a caller waiting. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I have to disagree on this water drilling and $60 million. I mean, I have a friend who lives in Anahola, and he went and started catching water from his roof, and it was amazing how much water he had in this fuel tank. He started collecting fuel tanks because he wanted to do farming, and he was just amazed just from one storm. I mean, if we all collected fresh water in our own backyards instead of mowing lawns and figured out a way how to store the water, we would, you know, we don't need to depend on a lot of things. It's just amazing. You know, just as a human being, you know, we can just do these kind of things. Anyway, I went to Fiji. I went to Tavarua. They're catching their own water, too. That's what we got to do. We need to stop mowing our lawns and start catching water because, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah,
we don't need to mess with cultures. We don't need to drill. You know, everybody just wants to make money. You know, it's not about that. It's just about, you know, really living to me. And to live, you know, and to share things, you know, I like that. I like that idea. But, you know, I think if they're doing it to make the population grow here, I don't agree with it.
Thank you.
We have enough problems with the growth that we have and enough people on the island that make problems. And, you know, a lot of people that came here, that are here, came from areas that are, you know, you don't even want to talk about, you know, cities and those things. You know, we're not into that. Most of the people that live, you know, most of the real people that live here want to be self-sustainable. I think that's what it is. You know, I mean, you know.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I don't think people are that nice.
Well,
from my experience.
Thank you for the insight. And I know even if you don't collect the water, you can slow it down a lot. You know, there's ways of having it go into a big vessel and then trickle out, and that will help the yard. Thank you so much. We've got another caller holding. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. This is Bruce Ferring, farmer on the North Shore.
Hey.
Hi. I kind of realize from what you've said or what I've heard that this project, this horizontal drilling project, is, according to John, I suppose, is primarily about creating more drinking water on the east side. And that's fine.
He's nodding. I think clean
that's
drinking
correct.
Water.
Uh-huh. Right.
Clean
right.
drinking water. Okay. I'm not that familiar with the project. I can't pretend to be educated about it. I'm really not. But I would say this. John, you did say something about, I think Felicia said, well, how much is this going to cost? And you said, you didn't say this is going to save money. You said this is going to make money. Who is it going to make money for? It's going to make money for Kauai's
the ratepayers.
Ratepayers?
Yes.
It's going to lower our water rate, you think?
Well, I think first it will stabilize it. That's what we're all shooting for right now. I think that it's if it stabilizes, then the next step would be to lower it. But the Department of Water comes out with an annual report, very, very interesting, when they give you a pie graph of costs.
Right.
And I can't quote it, but I can kind of visualize it because I went to their annual meeting. And the massive chunk, I don't remember what it was, 50%, 60%. Anyway, the biggest expense for the Department of Water is electricity, pumping water. And this project will eliminate pumping costs. It will eliminate almost all electrical costs associated with providing our community with drinking water, and it will generate electricity, and it will be tapping water that's that we know can't be contaminated, at least with any type of industrial, agricultural, or urban runoff, because it's being tapped from deep in the earth.
Well, certainly if it has the potential to lower rates, that is an argument in its favor, because I'm on ag water rates and I'm spending a fortune on water just to bring people food. It's really,
yeah, but Bruce, most of what you're spending there is the cost of electricity.
Okay. So what you're saying is this could help that.
Oh, it will. So here's the problem, though. This is it's very capital intensive. So, in other words, to save money in the future, you've got to spend money now. Because this alternative, I haven't looked at the study, but I would guess that it's the most capital intensive.
So where's the money coming from?
That I don't know.
See, that's a question that I really need answered.
Yeah, I think we need to ask
because
that.
Because what we see across the world,
meeting.
What we see, well, I've asked it. Uh-huh. I've asked it repeatedly, and it is never answered. And when we're seeing infrastructure projects happening around the world,
mm-hmm.
and they invest in these places that are so far away from the banks that are lending the money, there is, generally speaking, a collateral that's taken. And then we're seeing that in Europe, where, you know, Ireland, Cyprus, all these places are devastated. And so I that's a question that really matters to me, is
yeah,
where
I'm sure
is
you can
the
get
money
an answer
coming from?
Because
well,
this
they
is,
don't give it.
Yeah, well,
every single time I ask,
be,
they don't answer. So maybe you can ask and they will answer you and you can tell me.
Because it's the local government. It can't be that hard to get that out. I mean, it's going to come from somewhere, and it's going to be in their annual report.
Well,
but it'd be nice to know ahead of time.
It would be nice,
yes,
to know ahead of time. And I am uncomfortable that it's typically not answered. And when I did ask about the biofuels facility, sorry, Bruce, for jumping in on your piece here.
Oh, that's fine.
It was Deutsche Bank that is lending the money to them. And so when I look at what's going on in Europe, these are these European banks that are just depleting the population over there. It's predatory lending is what it is. When you lend money that there isn't the room to pay it back. So, again, I'm acknowledging this is a fear that I have, so I'm acknowledging my bias. But when we see that kind of predatory lending that goes out, and when I was asking Eric on the show here about, well, what about Deutsche Bank? He was like, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, wherever they get the money. And that's what everybody says. Well, wherever they get the money. And I just think, how do we get all this money from somewhere, and who eventually pays it back, and what's the collateral?
Our great-great-grandchildren pay it back.
I can understand your fear, Felicia, because, after all, didn't we pay too much for the electric company? And that's the reason that our rates were as high as they are?
Well, yeah, and that was an informed decision, and we were getting low interest, and I remember when that happened, and it could get a whole lot worse. And so when free flow power and that FERC permit thing came out, like, we weren't trying to attack the power company. The thing is that was UBS, one of the key players, individuals from the United Bank of Switzerland, that got that FERC permit before they ever even approached KIUC. And then they were doing energy derivatives with like 150 other countries. Other projects. And there are people playing a nasty game. And we can be conned into not noticing what's happening. And so sometimes when there's easy money, well, where's the easy money coming from? And it's just a question I don't feel like I hear enough answered, and so that's a concern for me.
Well, hopefully you'll get an answer about that. Felicia, I have another concern about water, and it does not have to do with this horizontal drilling proposal. But I'm wondering if this is an appropriate time to bring it up.
As long as I can say you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Holly Eva, the station that loves you. And you have Felicia, Jimmy with Out of the Box, Bonnie as a concerned citizen, and John as a harvested expert brought in here for the show. Okay, what's your water question? Is it about your area and the surface water?
It is, and it's about surface water. Mr. Pfluger has asked the Department of Land and Natural Resources to cut off the Coloco ditch from emptying water into the Coloco Reservoir, or what remains of the Coloco Reservoir. This action, if he is successful in doing so, and he's trying to force this upon the DLNR and threatening to sue, apparently, if he doesn't get his way, will do a number of things. It will take the remaining storage capacity of the Coloco Reservoir, which is now serving a number of farmers, some 30 or 35 farmers in the Kilauea Plain. Unfortunately, I'm not one of those who's able to benefit from that particular water source, but it will take their water and basically stop that private water system from happening, and the waters will no longer flow from that reservoir into that system. They will also no longer percolate or overflow from that system into any one of a number of streams on the North Shore. That is the Wailapa Stream, the Kalua Makua Stream, and a few others, and the one in Waipake. And apparently, if the water is shunted away from the Coloco, it's taken probably in the direction of Pilau is what I'm thinking he's thinking about doing with that water, or the DLNR, and they don't know where it's going to go. It's a crapshoot, apparently. All these streams, which have been, if not perennial streams, have been, you know, off and on streams for years and years and maybe forever, because it looks like this stream has been here since the Hawaiian days and before the Coloco Dam Breach took away all the terraces. There were obviously huge amounts of ancient Hawaiian terraces for taro along that stream bed, and will dry up those streams permanently. We'll never see water in them again, except when surface water happens to run into them. Now, this is an ongoing issue that's just really surfaced in the last month or so, and I think it's time that people stood up and took notice that they could, of what they could lose. They could lose the ecology of the stream beds. They could lose the water if they have any use for the water. They could use the quiet enjoyment of the stream in their backyard or as it passes under the highway or whatever. And for what? Well, we don't know exactly for what, because it hasn't been stated, but it appears that it may be for the reason that if the DLNR is, sorry for this word, stupid enough to actually acquiesce to these demands, Mr. Pfluger, when he comes to his trial sentencing on January 23rd, is very likely to change his plea for reckless endangering to not guilty and make the argument that the state could have turned off the water to the reservoir and therefore he's not responsible.
Well, that's a very loaded topic and beyond my ability to really add to what you've said. John, you're a waterman. Do you have anything to say on the surface water issue there? I know insurance is somehow feathered into this, too, like who's paying for the insurance on the dam. My understanding is it has been uninsured for like 6 years or something like that, but it's a big deal. How do we keep and maintain our surface water?
Well, Felicia, I'm very familiar with that system. I've worked on it for decades. But Bruce is going into a realm that I'm not familiar with, and I've never really been involved in that state-level policy or those types of decisions. I'm basically a nuts-and-bolts guy, so any questions about where the water's coming from or where it's going now, I could address, but the legality of it, I can't say anything.
Okay.
I don't know. I just to hope. I feel for Bruce, and I, you know, I know a lot of people on that system.
Right, it's a big issue, and Bruce, my heart goes out to you heavily for the tremendous loss that your family has endured downstream, and perhaps we can do a show. Would you like to be a guest on the show? And you could be one of a team to talk about surface water, because surface water is a big issue, not just for Kilauea, but also Anahola, also Pune, and certainly Kekaha and Waimea.
You know, I've known Tom Hitch for, I don't know, I guess 30 years now. He manages that system, and I'm aware of the struggle he's going through right now and his clients. And I think it's a terrible situation, but I don't really, I can't address the legality of it. I'm sure Tom could.
So, well, Tom has called in, and we've spoken about
it
before.
Yeah.
And I do have the KIUC issue coming up in a few moments, and I'm going to have one of the board members call in, and he's going to be on the air with us. Bruce, any final thoughts? I've got a holding caller. Going to take that. Going to hear your last words.
You go ahead, and thank you for your show, Felicia. I appreciate what you're doing. John, thanks. It's nice
thank
to talk
Bruce.
With you as well.
Thank you.
Good
talking to you.
Okay,
bye.
Thank you. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. I'm going to have to make this one quick, but you've been very patient.
Okay. I had a question about when they divert water and stuff, and even the DOW or A&D or whomever. What about the o'opu that they sift out of the rivers? What about the threatened native species? Do you know any mandatory ordinances or law that addresses that? I understand that the o'opu was taken off from the endangered species list. So, you know. What are their safeguards and their protocol is taking water and sifting out all of the live forms in there? What's they do with that and
okay.
the protocol for that?
I'll let John take this real quick, and then I'd like to get Don Heacock in here. He could really, you know, respond to that better. I think he's listening, but
I think the caller is referring to diversion structures, stream diversion structures and screens for irrigation, hydro systems, things like that.
My question is about using a leaf catcher to sift out all of that, life forms that come with their
What?
A leaf catcher.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
So,
sorry.
Okay. And caller, do you know me? Are we buddies?
Excuse me?
Are we buddies? Can you call me later? And maybe you could be on a surface water show, too. I'd like to do a surface water show.
Okay, yeah. This is coming from the Kauai Westside Watershed Council, and we've had, you know, problems with that and been trying to address that for over a number of years now.
Okay. My number, do you have a pen?
Yeah, I got it, Felicia, thanks.
Okay, so come in and be a part of a show.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. Okay, you're on the air?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, Felicia, this is Bill Chase.
Hey, Bill Chase.
How are you?
Good, thanks for calling in. You're calling about Kilauea Neighborhood Association, is that correct?
Yeah, a little bit about that. And one of the things the KNA has been involved in was the what was going to be a contested case hearing for Charles Summers and that big house along the Kilauea River.
Yes.
So you want me to give a little quick wrap on that?
Well, yes, I know that is an issue that is coming up before planning, like next week or the week after. Is that correct?
It's the week after on January 14th. They're having a meeting to look at his application to build a manager's house with a garage, a detached garage, and a barn, in addition to this home. The, quote, single-family dwelling, unquote, that's already there. This is around 9 to 10,000 square foot building with 15 separate roofs. And it was approved as a single-family farm dwelling, which is you know, from a distance, it really looks more like a little shopping center or an executive retreat center. And now he's applying to amend the conditions for approval 5 years ago when there was a contested case hearing. The number one condition was that he postpone the building of proposed manager's house and barn. And he's now back in asking for an amendment to that to allow him, and it's now being conveniently rebranded as a conservation manager's house and a conservation manager's barn, in spite of the fact that there have been no efforts either with Hawaiian Islands Land Trust or Fish and Wildlife or RC&D
so
with a conservation plan.
Will this come up at the Kilauea Neighborhood Association meeting on Tuesday?
It might. There might be a little bit of a report on it. The KNA voted to enter a contested case hearing and got intervener status earlier in 2013. So it's still on the agenda. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be in town, and I've been kind of, you know, sort of the lead
guy
on it.
Okay, so I will see if somebody can come in and speak about this. And the reason why this gets a little bit of extra focus, if people say, how come some things are singled out, is this happens to be a case example of what happens regularly when very, very well-heeled landowners are able to make a deal with a community that is, you know, allowing them to do something that is very unpalatable for the group. And then they make a deal, and they have an agreement, and everybody backs down. And then when they can afford attorneys indefinitely
to come back 5 years later when nobody's paying attention and
change their mind
and change the deal. Yeah.
And then so when you have a neighborhood association that's standing up to support the community, it's really tough when, like, a lot of these people have a bigger personal income than the county. You're breaking up.
I'm sorry.
Okay, I should probably let you go, but that's
Well, no, that's okay. I mean, that's exactly right, and that's why it comes up. And it would be great for any of the listeners who have some thoughts about this, if they wanted to contact me or go to the KNA website to get some more information. It would be really great to have some people showing up on the 14th to testify on behalf of the community that, by and large, from what I've been able to tell, the community thinks that his house is big enough that he doesn't need the manager's house and the barn. I think these are really more security buildings than they are have to do with any conservation, and that people need to speak up and let the Planning Commission know that the community is still paying attention, and even though for financial reasons and various reasons we weren't able to follow up on our contested case hearing this time because they're very expensive.
So January 14th, Planning Commission meeting.
January 14th at the Planning Commission, but get some good information. Contact the KNA website or me.
So KNA is Kilauea Neighborhood Association, and if you don't live in Kilauea, the reason this can be important is because every time these things happen, it sets a precedent. So if what the precedent becomes is you make an agreement with the community, and like the first time I went to those meetings, they committed to allowing people to continue to access that waterfall, which is like a playground for Kilauea, and it's an amazing waterfall. They said yes, yes, yes. Then they took that away.
Completely
and totally took that away, and that was the main concession that caused everybody to back down and say, all right, you want your 35,000 square foot print house or whatever they were looking for right on a conservation district at the apex of Papahanaumokuakea. You know, people go to jail for getting the wrong size crab.
Right.
And these guys can put such a high impact housing in there. I have to say it's pretty tasteful, but it does look like a small resort there on the hill, and I don't see them in there. So they get away with that, and then
they don't even live here.
So we have these big impacts, and it's tough because the county, with their $114 million annual budget, you know, when they're fighting every single little house, I mean, huge mansion house, you know.
Well, the thing is, the county also knows that if they deny Mr. Summers this, they have to have awfully good legal grounds. He has very expensive and skilled attorneys, and the county's looking at a lawsuit. And the county, the last thing the county needs is another lawsuit. So the county, there's a lot of pressure on the county to kind of give in, unless the community can mount equally sophisticated and powerful legal arguments, which I think we do have on our side. That takes a lot of time and a lot of money.
It does, and it's a constant effort. But I will say, I want to give a big shout out to the Planning Commission. They're good listeners.
They sure are.
They sure are. They're respectful.
And this is not about making the Planning Commission wrong or the county wrong or even Mr. Summers.
Right.
It's just the way the system works right now. It's kind
right.
of the community.
Okay. So thank you so much, Bill.
I'm getting spiked here. So
okay.
Thank you, Felicia.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha.
And you are listening to Out of the Box with Jimmy, Bonnie, John, and Felicia. And up next, we're going to be having Jan Tan Bruggen Kate from the KIUC Board, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative Board. And we're going to discuss a little bit about the ballot issue that is up now. And Out of the Box is made possible by listeners like you and in partnership with Yee Corporation and Aya's Garden Supply.
Yee Corp and Associates, providing personalized employee benefits and insurance solutions since 1988. A green company in an orange building. 808-245-5384. On the web at yeecorp.com.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So my understanding is I have Jan on the line. Jan, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you so much for calling in. So, we have a hotly contested ballot issue that at least some of us here on KKCR have been giving a lot of coverage. I want to let you have a word for what you would like to be sharing from the perspective of the board.
The issue is that the Public Utilities Commission, on an application from KIUC, established a fee for people who have elected to opt out of our smart grid program. The fee is $10.27 a month. A group of members led by Jonathan Jay, who has a show on your radio station,
mm-hmm.
and Adam Asquith, who has a show on your radio station, and a third person who doesn't have a show on your radio station, as far as I know, filed a petition with the signatures of a couple of, I think about 300 individuals who are members, asking that we reconsider that decision to establish those fees. And as a result of that, under our rules, we'll have an election, and the ballots are going out tomorrow in the mail, giving people the option to vote either no, the board's decision ought to be reversed, and therefore the board ought to rescind its decision to try and get those fees added to the bills of those people who have opted out, or yes, which would be a vote in support of the board's decision. The option for KIUC in terms of bottom line doesn't change. One way or another, the Public Utilities Commission authorizes the cooperative to collect enough fees to cover its costs.
Yeah, so go ahead.
And the question is, when someone or a class of people require something other than the standard service, should they pay or should all the members pay? And the board's decision was that in this situation, the people who require us to go out and still read meters as opposed to having them automatically read, which the smart meters do, ought to pay the cost of going out and reading those meters.
So
the alternative, the no vote, presuming it actually turned into a new tariff for KIUC, would be that all members would cover the cost for those 10% of our members.
Right. So it would be almost maybe a dollar a month for the other 90%.
Yeah, or yeah, for 100%.
If it went to 100%, it would work out to maybe a dollar a piece. And so I think that, and I'm exposing my bias, I don't have a smart meter, and I'm not, you know, I'm not thrilled about the charge. To me, it's really not about the money, because $10 is worth it to me per month to not have one. But what I think is of concern to people is that there are many different elements where charges are done. Like, for example, right now we're helping the Philippines have a smart meter system, a smart grid, like we're doing some relief over there for what's going on. There's all kinds of expenses that go out, and it seems like this one is creating division. And when they're, instead of like stacking these ballots together, or when we're seeing it, the ads and the paper and the mail out and the Pandora ads, and that's all membership money, that adds to the cost, right? So it just seems like, golly, why? Why do that? There's so many other expenses that just go out to everybody. Why pick on this Manini expense? That's, I think, in essence, the question that's there. So I'm asking you that one.
Yeah, I mean, it is a standard in utility practice throughout the country and throughout the world that you try to establish rate classes that have special costs associated with them. As an example, a business that occasionally has a sudden surge of power that's required, and we have to have equipment in place to cover that. They are in a special class, and they pay a little more than your standard residential consumer. If you've decided to put a house on a mountaintop far away from any power line, and we have to run power lines up to you, you are required to pay that cost. We don't ask all of the members to cover the cost of that, the wealthy person who does that.
I agree that's
so
accurate.
So this is a standard. It's sometimes called user pays, or cost user, or cost creator is the cost payer. If you have an identifiable class whose cost to the utility is different from everybody else, there ought to be a fee structure that addresses that issue, and all of the members shouldn't have to cover that cost.
But that's
the basis on which we made that.
Okay, but there's so many areas. I definitely don't want to be arguing with you on the radio, and I know there's another caller who I'm going to, if I have your permission, allow you guys both on at the same time. But what I will ask, I only have one lever so that there's not like arguing or going over each other. You know, I need to be able to speak back and forth to each other. But you know, when we're looking at this one, when it's just going out and measuring these meters, you are already charging for doing that. And when we have $5.5 million invested in all the other 90%, well, maybe then the people who didn't get the smart meter shouldn't have to pay their share of the $5.5 million that went out. I mean, there's a lot of ways to argue it. And I think for myself, my position as a community facilitator, I just think, oh boy, you know, here we have so much contention and mobilization in our community. This one isn't worth fighting over. And it seems like if I was in that other 90%, am I willing to spend 90 cents a month to not have any humbug? Yes, absolutely. Jan,
if I can respond to that, I mean, it is. If a majority of our members tell us they'd rather do it a different way, we'll of course do it a different way. But it is a standard in the utilities, and it's something that is not just the KIUC board. I see the KIUC board takes a lot of grief over this decision and some other decisions we've made, but in this case, both the consumer protector, whose job it is to protect the consumer, and the Public Utilities Commission itself agreed that this was a reasonable approach. This isn't just nine people in a room.
Well, and I'm
be
not
elected by the members of this utility.
I'm not trying to put down the board, and it comes back to the very same issue I spoke with John. I don't know if you were listening then on relative to water. Is the big divide is the people who trust the government versus the people who don't, and so. The people who don't trust that the NSA isn't sitting in on that chip or who don't trust. I mean, we know the NSA is absolutely on all of our electronic messaging. That's not even a question, right? It's a full-scale harvest. This won't be any different. Some people have a problem with that. Some people have legitimate health concerns.
I'll stop and say I don't agree with you.
Right. We're on the different sides of the divide.
I agree that the evidence is clear that the NSA is collecting a heck of a lot of information that we didn't know they were collecting, that many of us are surprised they were collecting, but they're not listening in on everything. And I've seen your Facebook post in which you said the NSA has a chip in smart meters. That's not the case.
Well, actually...
You made that up, right?
No, I actually didn't, you know. I mean, it's not that they have a chip in there. It's that they have... I put in there, it says right in the wording that they don't have to share with a third party other than law enforcement. And so law enforcement, it's not even a question. The board doesn't have to decide whether they're going to share it or not. It's just out there. It's a given with the installation of these that it is open to law enforcement. And so people who fear the law or fear the government are going to respond to that differently than people who don't. And so where...
I absolutely recognize that. And it is, but I mean, it is inescapable that if a law enforcement agency shows up with a court order saying you must give us information... The fact that we have smart meters is not different from what we had before, and is not different from the telephone company being forced to give up its information.
And I'm
that's the truth.
I don't want to argue that one hard with you because we could spend too long going at looking at that. The bottom line
is... And we've
done
it before.
And we have. The bottom line is some people trust, some people don't. So that is really the division. We have this other caller who's very smart. Let's bring her on. Can you put... So, caller, you're on the air. And so when the two of you guys are talking, I want to be able to make sure there's a good exchange. So please share what you have on your mind.
Okay, I will. And I feel like my phone has a bad connection. So if it does, I'll just hang up.
It's coming through clear.
Okay, thank you. You know, I've been... Hi, Jen. I appreciate you being on the phone for this issue because... It is a big one for the community. And I've been to board meetings. I've been to the ballot input meetings. And frankly, it's very frustrating to try to have input and realize that, honestly, I don't feel like the membership has any authentic, genuine impact upon the board. I feel like the decisions get made in a bubble there, and it's the utility bubble. And, you know, I'm sure it goes upline and through other cooperatives, but there's such a wealth of community intelligence out there, and I feel like it's just not received at all. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it's a protection thing, I don't know if it's just a basic function of efficiency to sort of stick with what you got and go with that. But my bigger thing right now is like just the hypocrisy of calling the people who've opted out of smart meters cost causers. That's a whole new thing, and it's like a buzzword of saying green or sustainable, and it's a whole new word. And utility co-ops, their whole foundation was based on sharing the cost of energy among everybody because they started out as rural utilities where people were in far-flung areas and it was a way to make things affordable. That is the foundation. So if we're not a rural utility anymore, then we should be dropping all that. If we're not a co-op anymore, then stop calling us a co-op because there really isn't a whole lot of cooperative energy around this at all, I don't feel like, pardon the pun. But what I do think is right now in particular, you know, there was a very genuine attempt to have a ballot, to have a cooperative process, which is in the bylaws. And you show up at a meeting, and there seems like this genuine receptivity to input, and then the whole ballot language issue just went flat on its face. So there was a very discouraging experience to watch people show up at two meetings in quite large numbers and then have that whole thing just be a farce. So the ballot language turned out to be nothing like what the ballot petitioners, the names on the petition had agreed to. then
you're hitting a
the ad
can I,
to have
can
the
I, can I respond
ad?
To a couple of them before we move
I
on?
I mean, I think that's crazy that you're spending membership money for Pandora ads and paper ads, and there was no equality in that at all. There was no lack of bias. It was clearly that KAC has, you know, it has a dog in the fight and it's going to win it at all costs.
Okay,
and that's,
Kathleen. I want to let him be able to respond for a moment, and I need to tell the listener, you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei K-A-Q-A Kilauea. This is Felicia with Out of the Box. Bonnie's in the house here with me, so is Jimmy. And this is Jan Ten Bruggengate on the phone with us from KIUC board, and then a concerned caller about the ballot issue. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I just, before too many issues got dropped, I wanted to be able to respond to a couple of them. One of them is the issue that the board doesn't listen. It's interesting in human experience that we can look at exactly the same thing and come up with different conclusions about what we saw. You know, in terms of the ballot language, the first issue, three members of the board, I wasn't one of them, from KIUC, and three members of the petitioners committee met together, agreed on ballot language. They both came in with different language. They agreed on ballot language that they all six of them signed off on. I've seen the signatures. All six of them said, this is ballot language that we have agreed on. We had a public meeting, and one of the people who was in that room who signed off on that language says, I don't agree with the language that I signed off on. I want the original language that I came in with before we negotiated. And we listened to the caller, whose voice I recognize, and to others, who said, please put numbers into the ballot language. We did that. We added numbers into the ballot language. At the second meeting, we were told, well, you didn't put enough numbers in the ballot language. And we decided to stick with what we had. But I think it's clear that the board has met with and responded on a regular basis to what we've been hearing. And not only at those meetings. I mean, we've had multiple meetings around the island on a regular basis. People have access to this board. They also meet with us in Costco, in Times Supermarket, in Safeway. People call us at home. We're not operating in a vacuum. At least that's my perspective looking at the facts. The second issue was the suggestion that that cooperatives have a single rate structure for everybody. I don't think that's the case anywhere in the country. Cooperatives have rate structures that differ depending on the kind of the way you use power or the way you attached to the system, and I'd invite you to look at the tariffs that have been established by any utility around the country, including ours, which is very complicated. It's not just the people who have opted out of smart meters. It's large industrial users. It's irrigation users. It's virtually any user whose use of power is distinguishable from the others and whose cost structure is different from those of others. And the PUC, permits, but it actually mandates that we establish those categories and treat them differently. And with that, I'll let the caller go on.
Okay, so I agree. I think there is listening. I'm not saying across the board, but in this particular issue with smart meters, and my point about the language, the ballot language, was that, yes, you put the $10 a month fee, but as I sat in that room and the board members talked about, well, everybody who's opted out has opted out, so they've already paid that $45 change-out fee, I thought, wow, you just have no idea. There's plenty of people who haven't opted out who might want to. It's a learning curve on this whole smart meter concern issue. And so to not put that on the ballot, which is a chunk of money for some people, I just thought that was very much a missing thing. If you're going to add all those pieces, plus there was language that was, to me, that was not unbiased on the ballot part. You know, and if it's true that the membership can vote no, and then we won't, you know, the fees will be spread some other way. At those meetings, what you were saying, what the board was saying was, well, the PUC has, demanded that we do this. So then it'll be interesting to find out if and when the no vote goes through, how that's going to be handled between the board and the PUC. Do you have to go back to the PUC to get permission to change that fee structure? And if so, all those suggestions that had been made long before you even went to the PUC, those issues were coming up. And the $10 a month, there's so many people who have looked at the rates across the country and said, wow, 10 bucks a month, that might be what is getting charged to non-smart meter people, but that's not necessarily a fair cost. I mean, there have been somebody who, well, Bjorn, who showed up at meetings too, who has kind of looked at what it costs and actually called electric companies. This is an 18-year-old who called electric companies and said, what does it cost to read meters? And if you want to go to the site that Taylor has up, Smart Meter Free Quiet. Oops, I'm going to have to look it up. You might know it, Felicia. Anyway, there's lots of really good information about why it shouldn't have to be $10 a month, even if you're going to charge a fee just to those folks who've opted out.
Well,
So I really feel like, and you didn't really address the issue of the paid propaganda to Pandora and how it is that KUC decided to go ahead and pay you member money to propagand on one side of the issue. There was no offer to, okay, we'll put something out, the pros and the cons. It was very much using our membership money. And so, you know, the 10% who are wanting to have a voice have no voice or access to the membership finances to put that money out. We've got to dig out of our own pockets once again. So if you could, Jan, just maybe let us know how you decided to how it was decided to spend membership money to promote the yes vote. I'd appreciate knowing about that.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. And Jim Kelly, our director of communications, who may have been actually in some of the planning meetings that I may not have been in discussing that, is available to call in a little later.
I just want to say that she was trying to remember a website, and so somebody just handed it to me. It's safemeterkauai.org. And so I want you guys to be able to continue this, but about 5 more minutes, because I've got other issues of people waiting in here to talk about other topics.
Okay. So that was my last question.
Very quickly, the first piece was whether the 1027 is an accurate representation. And I heard Bjorn at the meeting. We have also reached out, and it's my understanding that so did the State Consumer Protector and the State Consumer Act Advocate to utilities elsewhere. And it's my understanding that the average fee for those utilities that, you know, many utilities won't let you opt out at all. We opted out at the request of our members. We allowed an opt out at the request of our members.
That's why we're a co-op, though. Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But many co-ops don't allow opt outs. But among those that do, the fee ranges from about $8 to about $12. And so, first of all, our fee structure is in the same range. Second of all, it is based on the actual costs that were, in essence, audited by folks at the state. We've determined that keeping those meter readers on staff that otherwise would not have been required, having their trucks available, having all the other pertinent equipment and software and so on associated with going out and eyeball reading those meters, is about $350,000 a year. Now, the question is, do the people who opted out, who are causing that cost, and I appreciate that you don't like the term, but who caused that cost, should they pay it or should all the membership pay it? Ultimately, financially, it doesn't make a difference to KIUC as a cooperative, one way or the other. We just thought it was fair that the larger membership that's not incurring that cost shouldn't have to pay that cost. As to the other issue, we are interestingly faced with your argument is that you're doing it out of your own pocket, and I have no way to judge that, and I don't doubt it. But it's a very well-organized opposition to the decision the board made that involves multiple Facebook pages, multiple websites, several members of the active opposition to KIUC have radio programs on this radio station.
So can I speak to that?
Go ahead.
I want to speak to that in that, like, it seems like it's important to not be politically tone deaf, that there is so many people mobilized. There are thousands of people mobilized who, as I was saying earlier, have lost faith in the government, have lost faith that organizations are going to do right by them. So it is a pretty much a leaderless group. I take a very big compliment that when you say that we are organized, wow, thank you, because you have no idea how disorganized it is.
Yeah.
So it is really disorganized. Bonnie has something she wants to say here for a second.
Yeah, my electric bill is usually around $20 a month. That's because I practice energy conservation, and a $10 fee is not acceptable when I'm only spending $20 a month for my electricity. And plus, I don't want EMFs. Mahalo.
Well, mine is about 30, and so I think that what happens, I think what a risk is that people could leave the grid, right? We don't want that either. That's kind of moving in the wrong direction. But if people feel alienated to a point that, you know, it's not that big of a leap to do that.
It's interesting and a useful analogy that those of you who have solar on your roofs and therefore who are paying on the order of 20.
I don't have solar. I do not have solar.
You are being subsidized.
I don't have solar.
She doesn't have solar.
Okay. I apologize in your case, but the many people who have solar on the roofs, and we've heard from them, who have $20 or $10 or, you know, $13 phone bills, I mean electric bills, are being subsidized by everybody else. Your neighbors are covering your costs because it costs, on average, about $105 to be hooked up to the grid and available to deliver power.
Right, but I could flip that and say, you know, and I only have six panels, by the way, but all during a sunny day, they are grinding power back onto the grid. And so when you have all this point source solar all around the grid, it is people like I am financing and not charging my neighbors for my power contribution. Like all day long, on a sunny day, it's just going, wah! And before I had my solar, my electric bill was maybe 75 or 80. I've never been a big power consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm trying to do my homework well and be a good environmental person. I have a call question in from people, and then I don't mean to be cutting off this really important issue. There's just other issues that people are crowding into here. But
Felicia, if
yes,
I could ask Jan how much they spent on the ads for Pandora and paper,
okay,
if he could tell that. I think that would be a helpful number because many of us are thinking it's an exorbitant amount of money. So I'd like to know what that
is. Jim Kelly, our communication director, is ready to answer those questions. I haven't seen those numbers. I don't know.
Thank you.
Okay. Can members read their own meter? Is, you know, in different communities, there's ways that that was a caller's question.
Yeah, many rural communities on the mainland have done that in the past, and a few still do. Most of them describe that as their single biggest problem, because when people read their own meter or meter readings, as has been suggested, are averaged over a period of time, and then you catch up, you only read once every 6 months or read every once every year, is that when those numbers end up being way too low, people who are surprised by a big bill to make up the difference for what they hadn't anticipated, it ends up being a big problem for both the utility and the membership.
Okay.
And so it's my understanding that every utility that has that system is trying to get away from that system because it doesn't work well.
Okay, thank you.
I understand that it's an attractive system for folks facing the fees, however.
I have a final comment I would like to share with you. I really appreciate KIUC. I mean that sincerely. I appreciate that you have an almost impeccable safety record, that there's very little interruptions of power. The people in the places are very nice, from the meter reader to the linemen to the office staff. And so sometimes I think there's a miscommunication that comes out. when I'm accused of attacking KIUC because, like, I am sorry when choices are made like this that becomes divisive, and then it has to be, you know, all of a sudden a lot of humbug. Like, if I was on the board, I would say, oh, you know, quietly just fluff this 90 cents around to everybody and let's not have a fight. It's not worth it. But I do want to mahalo Kauai Island Utility Cooperative for being an effective and innovative power company that is working hard. And I think when we talk about this divide between those who trust and those who don't, part of the reason that the board isn't able to grasp what we're saying is because they're too good of people to really recognize, wow, you know, there can be this dark intention from lenders or, you know, elements up the pipeline that are outside of them. And at least from me, there's not an insult to the board or the management. It's like, okay, great company, doing a really good job. Let's, like, be peaceful right here. So for me, even if I didn't have, you know, if I did have a smart meter, I'd be okay with $1 a month or something like that for peace. So that's where I'm coming from, and I am sorry that we are having this contention, and I appreciate you, Jan, very much for coming on the air, and do you feel heard?
I appreciate what you just said. And I'll also say that we have these conversations at the board level frequently. It comes up, should we just do the easy thing or should we do the right thing? And often it is really attractive to try and do the easy thing that won't make anybody mad. But sometimes you feel like you have to do the right thing. In this case, that's what we've done, and we recognize that it's hurting some folks.
And they're mad.
And they're mad.
And you're going to pay for it, right?
You know, the many of you are friends of mine.
Yes.
And I'm hearing you. I also have a responsibility that goes beyond friendships, and I have to do what I think is right for the entire membership and for the organization and for our community.
Okay.
And it's not always a decision, as you well know, and you've taken a few yourself, that makes everybody happy.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Goodbye, and thanks for your caller.
Okay. Aloha. Bonnie, you've come in, and I want to give you some moments here to talk about another really important issue. And then after that, it will be Mo's with Acoustic Luau.
Happy New Year, everybody. This is regarding the environmental impact statement. Preparation notice for the Ohana Hanale Plantation Resort Project, which is 34 units on Kaukuniunu Ridge, which is right above Blackpot Beach Park. They call them units. They also have bungalows. They call them bungalows, and there are 86 of these proposed, along with the hotel.
That's
around
Pu'upoa Marsh, that's facing out towards what is known as the bowl for the surfing area. And then the ridge line where those 34 units, that's along the ridge where people from Hanalei Bay would be looking up across the river.
Yes. And this is a critical time. The developer is eBay founder. And he has paid a Honolulu Consulting Corporation to compile this prep notice for the environmental impact statement. And there's 3 days for folks to give their comment on this issue. And I invite and encourage people. There's a website, EISP, as in pineapple, N, EISPN, at HonoleiPlantation.com. Or you can do it by mail to Earl Matsukawa at Wilson Akimoto Corporation, 1905 South Britannia Street, Honolulu, 96826. And I have a question out there. Anyone listening, do you think you'll be able to afford one of those units or a bungalow? It's common knowledge that there's countless luxury homes here on beautiful Kauai that are vacant. And I don't mean to be whatever, But, you know, most of these people that will be buying these are the elite. And they'd probably be their second, third, or fourth mansion. And I call in the Kauai County Planning Department, who's going to be making the decision on this after the environmental impact statement process is passed. So we can make a difference in retaining some quality of life here, keeping the beauty of beautiful Kauai and Hanalei Bay intact. So we can, the power of the pen, the paper trail, and...
Is there an email address?
EISPN@HanaleiPlantation.com.
@HanaleiPlantation.com. And then, so people could go in there. They actually have...
That's the one to send your comments to by January 7th.
So you're sending it to the developer. They have a pretty nice website, and they have renderings that really don't... show much damage. So that's the challenge when you look at imagery, is that you can draw something really nice with a pen, and like, how does it really look? Like, how big is the square footprint of all those places along the side there? It's a big challenge. Many people are, you know, very unhappy to be contemplating looking up at there. And the best that I can tell from, like, Ohana o Kauai, that is what started that group, actually, is the Defend Hanalei, is about the ridgeline there. And it seems that people are willing to concede somewhat about the bungalows, which is something like timeshare or hotel, that's like hotel rooms around that edge. It's I think it's an interesting development because that is really right downstream of the wastewater treatment plant. So I don't know that that isn't what's going to be in the fish pond. They're going to be, part of the gift to the community to get people to be okay with this is putting in this restoration of the fish pond. Like we were just talking about what's going on in Kilauea with a house that originally said, okay, you can make it to the waterfall if you just let us do this. So they get let to do that, and then they go, well, you know what, you're not going to the waterfall. And then so that's, again, when we've talked about trust, when people don't trust the government, people don't trust the developer. So it's very, very difficult for people to have trust on that, and I don't think people need to know whether or not they have trust to feel like if they want to look at a rim of high-end housing.
And it's only 120 feet from the Hanalei River.
Right, so it is right there. So that is also going before the Planning Commission. Is that correct? Or is
it there... will. Well, this is the environmental impact statement process. This is a critical window right now to comment on this PREP notice. The next step is the draft environmental impact statement.
So when this EISPN that goes to HanaleiPlantation.com, that infers that this is them doing a self-study. So I would presume that behind that is going to be somebody else studying it, because obviously if they come up with a plan, they're going to say, look, we're not going to hurt anything, right? Because they already believe they're not going to be hurting anything.
Well, Wilson Akimoto Corporation is part of this environmental impact statement. They are being paid by the developer, which is the eBay founder.
Pierre Omidar.
Si, senorita. So this EIS is, you know, it's the fox guarding the hen house once again. This developer is paying Wilson Akimoto Corporation to do this EISPN, the Environmental Impact Statement PREP Notice. That comes out. And then is the draft EIS, and I assume that Wilson Akimoto Corporation will be doing the draft EIS. So there's going to be 45 days after the draft EIS is released, and then wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. The final's out, and the bulldozers away. Now, where's that song, Waimanalo Blues?
It's going to be coming on. So that's a very, very heart-wrenching issue. I know I went to, and we, had... on the show prior to a big community meeting. There was probably 400 people. Well overflowed the Hanalei school cafeteria. There was maybe 10 people who supported it, all of whom had a direct financial interest in it who were on the other side. And the important thing is that, you know, we all love each other. It's not like this is somebody's horrible. It's like, how do we make things righteous? And so that deadline is 3 days from now. It's Monday?
It's actually January 7th.
Okay.
So you can either go to their, do it electronically or get it postmarked. I personally, you know, talk about the trust factor here. I don't trust the email comment. So there, you could mail them, get it postmarked, and just, you know, it doesn't have to be a book. It's just two sentences, how you feel about this project, and just include your name, signature, and
where
address.
You live, and where you live. That's always very important. And in all fairness, there may be some people who support it, and they could utilize that same pathway. Running down a list of things that we basically didn't cover, I did get a call with a confirmation that the ULU event is Saturday, January 11th on Kauai. It's not 3 days. That's Maui and Oahu with those other days. So this Saturday, 8:30 to 12:30, I am going to that, and it is a nominal fee. There is food forest development continuing on Saturday. There's a big poi day tomorrow at Waipa. There's so many great celebrations that's been this week. We've got permaculture workshop coming up. There's this Bring It Home film about industrial hemp that's going to be playing Monday the 6th at Church of the Pacific. We have the Ohana Ag Cooperative is trying to move forward. There's the worker housing or affordable housing that's coming up in Princeville. Seems a little expensive to me. That's the one thing I kind of go, wow, you know, it's still pretty spendy. But I even though I don't like to have impact from looking at any fresh buildings, just like anybody else, I'm still happy that there is going to be housing there.
I understand that housing is only going to be like 40 units or something. I mean, what a concession to make. Okay, affordable housing for 40 people when this project is 65 acres?
This concession is from a long time ago. It's not to do with the Hanalei Ridge project. This is Princeville's one that they have wanted to build for a long time, and
they
struggled to do that.
But the same thing like at Kukui Ula, the low-income housing down there is a joke compared to those.
Yes, and so that is, we should do a whole show on housing. We've been talking a lot about houselessness, and it is a pressing issue. I was pleased to see that that was one of the issues in the Garden Islands paper yesterday that they did say was common among our elected officials. Housing is a crisis.
Especially for Native Hawaiian people. The Native Hawaiians make up the largest portion of homeless people in Hawaii, and they're not homeless, but they're houseless. They're strangers in their homeland, and awe that the Hawaiian people don't even have a place to live.
So many issues to be able to speak about. Very important. Bonnie, I really appreciate your coming in here and helping me address these issues.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Jimmy is in here late, but his spirit's in here, and he's been answering the phones. Happy New Year. And then I want to close out with Waimanalu Blues, because it really does speak to these challenges and the hardship. And for people of us that are newcomers like you and I who've only lived here 30 or 40 years, it hurts us too. It's still our home. And love to Bobo and Auntie Kathy Hamyung and all these wonderful people.
All the Ivi Kupuna, we love you.
Uncle
Mahalo
Wayne.
For helping us out from the other side.
Uncle Wayne, who just passed this week.
Many,
many people.
Kene kili iho malu.
So out of the box, signing out. And then after us is Acoustic Luau. Thank you.
us along for the ride. Some they will cry because